Take a close look at the clear windows of your patient's corneas. Closer, closer. You really have to zoom in, and you'll find 7,000 nerve receptors per square millimeter. These nerve endings supply protective factors to the cornea and play further roles in blinking and tear production. When something interrupts this innervation, and a lot can affect it, from diabetes and MS to shingles to surgery, the patient can develop neurotrophic keratitis, or NK. In today's podcast, you'll hear from a panel of optometrists who discuss how to identify early cases of NK and help connect your patients to appropriate treatment. First, Dr. Cecilia Ketting will share insights into how to talk to your patients to uncover potential underlying causes of NK. Then Dr. Melissa Barnett discusses the common clinical signs and the lack of a certain symptom that indicate NK.
When we think about neurotrophic keratitis and the underlying causes, it's really important to kind of put that investigator hat on. Some of the things that we think of that are more top of mind are definitely diabetes, right? Because we know we get neurotrophic damage or end organ damage. We get patients with neuropathies in the fingers and toes, but we can't forget about the cornea. So make sure that when you're talking with patients with diabetes, we're thinking through that as well. But some of those that may not be on top of mind, making sure asking about any kind of herpetic outbreaks in the past or shingles, and not just necessarily on the eye or in the eye, right? We got to remember that it can move and present itself differently each time. Well, that is important to know if it was in the eye, especially because that can really put them at a much higher risk for neurotrophic keratitis. We do want to know what their risk factors are, that they may also just have a herpetic outbreak or shingles. Beyond that, I think things that I think of when I'm talking to patients are a big one is chemotherapy. And while a patient may not be on chemo and at that moment, don't forget to ask about history. It's not, you know, we kind of feel bad about prying into our patient's medical history, but there really are reasons that we're doing this. And especially when it comes to cancer and cancer treatments, regardless of where that cancer was, chemotherapy, how does it work? It causes damage and kills fast-growing cells. And guess what our mucous membranes and corneas are, is a fast-growing replicating cell. So that can be one of the main side effects that is long-lasting for these patients. So do ask about histories with that as well. But I think overall, again, it's just asking patients, especially when you see signs and symptoms that are out of whack, you see more stain and no pain or very little, and you know you should have it, start to look through the history, their medical histories, and other things that might be contributing.
A lack of corneal sensitivity is the most common clinical sign of NK. And sometimes it's difficult to differentiate between dry eye disease and NK. So the location of corneal staining is really important. The diagnosis is most likely dry eye if there's inferior corneal and conjunctival staining. However, if there's central or diffuse corneal staining, it's most likely to be NK. So in my clinical experience, a patient with stage 1 NK is at high risk for disease progression if there's a history of other factors that contribute to NK. Corneal staining without pain, or if the symptoms are considerably less than the signs. Also, if the signs and symptoms don't correlate, then I'm suspicious for NK. So for example, I am highly suspicious of NK if there's severe corneal staining or an epithelial defect is present with minimal ocular symptoms and corneal anesthesia.
In patients with suspected NK, testing their corneal sensitivity is crucial. Dr. Barnett and Dr. Vin Deng offer perspectives on when and how to do this testing.
A thorough patient history is really beneficial to diagnose NK. Questions include a history of any type of ocular surgery, cataract surgery, retinal surgery, glaucoma surgery, herpetic infection, diabetes, ocular or facial surgery, chronic use of drops with BAK, for example, contact lens overwear. And if a patient has a history of any of these conditions, it's valuable to check corneal sensitivity. The location of corneal staining is also important. I suspect NK if there's central or diffuse corneal staining on slit lamp examination. It is important to check corneal sensitivity prior to the installation of anesthetic eye drops. It's difficult to evaluate NK if there's a lack of sensation. It's also important to assess for NK prior to any sort of dilation drops. However, vital dyes such as sodium fluorescein strip without anesthetic may be used prior to checking for corneal sensitivity.
Yeah, corneal sensitivity is sort of like a stepping stone, right? So you need to have some form of corneal sensitivity testing in order to be able to diagnose NK. The way I do it in my practice is that I use a sterile Q-tip and then I do sort of the cotton whips test. So I'll put on some gloves and then I'll go ahead and slowly create a little wisp and then I'll go ahead and test that on the patient. But one of my other colleagues, have kind of mentioned that even though this is not a quantitative way of measuring sensitivity, it is a qualitative way, which means that we don't know, how sensitive their cornea is. You need to have a corneal esthesiometer in order to be able to do that. She did recommend that you can also use dental floss, right? So unscented dental floss. But the thing with dental floss is that what you can do is you can cut the dental floss to a specific length. So that way, all of your dental flosses are the exact same length, right? So the problem with, doing the cotton whisk test is that it's very subjective, right? So it's not, depending on how you peel on it. So that's one way. But for me, it has to be realistic. It has to be, simple and easy. One tip that I do have is making sure that you try it on normal patients, right? So that way you know what to expect in terms of the response.
A number of therapies are available to treat patients with early stage NK. Dr. Stang and Barnett discuss how to get the greatest benefit from two of these: blood-based topicals and scleral lenses.
So prior to Synergermine, I've used autologous serum or blood-based therapies quite a bit. I think that most of our colleagues think that, the blood-based type of therapies are more reserved for, later stages or more worst case scenario, but I would advise them to, use them earlier in their stages, maybe the stage one NK patients. Typically what I would do is I would start out with, a concentration of 20 to 30% at a 4 to 6 times a day on the dosage. And then if I wasn't, receiving the adequate response that I was looking for, then I would go ahead and, consider increasing the concentration to, up to 50% and even higher. Now with the new kid on the block, so to speak, with the PRP drops, there's been a lot more, sort of anecdotally faster healing because it doesn't contain as much of the anti-inflammatory mediators in the blood, in the serum. So with those, they're able to kind of achieve, better results and faster results, which is just something that I'm excited about. And other companies make it really easy, for clinicians like myself that kind of want to get into the blood serum tier treatment regimen, because all I have to do is send them a prescription and then they take care of everything. The patient, get contacted, a phlebotomist comes to their house, they do the blood draw, sends it to their lab, and then their shipment of the medication gets sent directly to their house. So I feel like ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the biggest hurdle is where do I send these patients if I want to get them started on some sort of blood serum tiers.
Scleral lenses provide a fluid reservoir for healing, corneal protection, and hydration. Scleral lenses help promote persistent epithelial defect healing and prevent corneal ulcer development. So in fitting scleral lenses in eyes with NK, I recommend a preservative-free filling solution or application solution in the lens bowl. If a PED or persistent epithelial defect is present with NK, there's a standard protocol. The scleral lens is worn on an extended wear basis, and one lens is used during the daytime, one lens is used during the nighttime. It's really important to optimize oxygen delivery by selecting a material with a high decay, reducing lens center thickness and minimizing clearance while avoiding central or limbal contact. It's also important to fit the lens a little looser to promote tear exchange to prevent suction. And most importantly, the lens is filled with a preservative-free antibiotic to prevent infection. Each day, the practitioner removes the scleral lens to monitor the defect and clean the lens, and the patient is seen every single day, including weekends, until the defect has resurfaced. I recommend one additional night of extended wear after the epithelial defect has resurfaced to strengthen the epithelium. Adding in endogenous NGF may also benefit PED management with scleral lens wear.
Earlier, Dr. Dang mentioned synedrumin, which is a recombinant human nerve growth factor approved for treating all stages of NK. Dr. Ketting will end this podcast with some perspectives on outcomes that clinicians should look for in their patients while using this therapy.
So when we look at the studies for synedrumin versus what we're looking at in clinic, I think we have to take two things away from it. With synedrumin, at their endpoints, their primary endpoints for the studies to get FDA approval, we're looking at unhealed corneal abrasions or wounds, right? And do they fully heal, regardless of the stage? Whether we know that they included all stages or stage 2 and 3. The other thing I think that's really important to think about in these patients is the corneal sensitivity improving? Because at the end of the day, that's really what we need. We need to heal the cornea, but we need that neurotrophic supply and that neuro pathway to function again. Otherwise, we're at a much higher risk for this to reoccur because the nerves aren't working. And that was the problem in the first place. So I think while the studies are great and we do want to look for an improvement during the process of the patients using synedrumin, as far as wound healing and or in patients who happen to be stage 1, we're looking for improvement in signs of limbal stem cell deficiency. We're seeing improvement of the actual amount of staining, corneal fluorescein staining that we're seeing in these patients. We also want to make sure that we are testing, and I typically do I see them about halfway through their trial, their dosage, their 8-week usage. I see them about week 4, and I'll go ahead and retest the corneal sensitivity so that I have a better idea how that's doing as well. Now, by the time we get to week 8, when they have finished the synedrumin, these patients may not be 100%, and that's okay. Because if I've got an improvement in that corneal innervation and that sensation and the nerves are functioning, that tells me it's going to continue to improve because we've already started to get the process going. So I think it's really important to look at both factors, both what the FDA trials were looking at with corneal wound healing and decrease in staining. But I think it's also just as important, if not possibly more, to me making sure that are we getting an improvement in that corneal sensitivity.